you may hear that title and you may say, well, wait a minute, we are believers. We don't believe in, you know, happenstance and fortune. And when you talk about things being, you know, misfortune or, well, that's unfortunate, by very definition, you're removing God. Let me give to you again the definition of, first of all, fortune. It is a term that is commonly bandied about. Fortune properly denotes chance, accident, luck. This is part of our vocabulary. Only if you remove God. It is the arrival of something in a sudden or unexpected manner. Hence, a dictionary says, the heathens deified chance and consecrated temples and altars to the goddess Fortuna, from fortune, was a goddess of fortune and the personification of luck in the Roman religion. She might bring good luck, she might bring bad luck. Hence, the modern use of the word misfortune or fortune is for a power supposed to distribute the lots of life according to her own whim. That is why we think of things being misfortune, unfortunate. In fact, that's why the definition, Webster's definition from 1913 of unfortunate or misfortune is unnecessary and unforeseen trouble. Everything about that points to your outlook on life. And people that are lonely because of unfortunate or misfortune circumstances in their life, it is clearly their interpretation of life. And really, that's what I want to talk about tonight. Your interpretation of life. Because if you and I remove God from the picture, we are going to interpret life the way the secular world does, the way that atheists and agnostics interpret life, which is not Christian. Remember what the basis of Christianity is? Christianity is, number one, believing that there is a God. This is the premise of Christianity. And I've said it so many times, I hope you'll pretty soon be memorized. That the premise is, number one, that there is a God, and number two, that God has made himself known to mankind in the Word of God. An atheist denies that. An atheist says, number one, the first point, there is no God. An agnostic says, okay, if there is a God, he hasn't communicated himself to mankind. So by definition, if you are a Christian, you believe that there is a God, and you believe that he's communicated himself to us in the Word of God. So many people today, more than ever before in America at least, are now interpreting life through atheistic or agnostic glasses. They are seeing all the things that go on in their lives without having God in the scenario. And if there is a God, they will at least concede, he hasn't made himself known to mankind. So every calamity, every trial, every tribulation in their life is interpreted that way. They don't know. It's all, you know, some small god out there, Fortuna, that just distributes randomly, based on their whim, good and bad. And that's the way people go through life. When they have removed the God of heaven, the personal, sovereign, omnipotent, omniscient God, who is involved in the affairs of man, you remove that, you're going to interpret life so differently. By the way, the same life. You and I, we're in this world together. We walk side by side with the agnostic and the atheist. And yet, isn't it interesting that we have two totally different takes on life? It reminds me of the spies that went out to spy the land. And really, I love that in Numbers, the book of Numbers, chapter 13, 14, because it really is a small snippet of just everyday life in the Christian's life. You get 12 spies that went to spy out the land. You remember the story, right? They go in and they all see the same thing. They see the walls high. They see giants. They see grapes in clusters. They see all kinds of blessings. And yet they come back after having walked through the same exact world, the same, and saw the same things. They have two totally different takes on life. And then they communicate that those takes to the rest of the people. You got that going on every single day here. Even in the Christian world. Because they were supposedly followers of Jehovah. You have people going through life seeing the same thing, and yet by their very outlook on life, by their spin on every scenario in life, they're coming out with two totally different perspectives. And as in that scenario in Numbers 13, it is always the minority that sees things from God's perspective. Joshua and Caleb, remember them? They saw the exact same things the other 10 saw. And for some reason, when they went through and viewed everything that the 10 saw, their attitude was, we are able to go in. Let's go up at once and take it. They walked by faith. But unfortunately, as is true in scenario after scenario, so many people have removed God from the picture that their spin on life is, we are not able to do it. There are giants in the land. There are walled places. We are never going to do it. And that's their take on life. And I submit to you that when you remove God from the picture, you have a very bleak, lonely existence. Duke University did a study. Duke University in and of itself is an interesting little snippet of life, like most institutions of higher education in America. You know, most institutions in America of higher education were founded for religious purposes to train ministers after whatever sort of Christian denomination, most of them. Duke is no different. Duke was founded by Methodists. Has some Quaker influence there, but long ago has Duke forsaken their religious purpose. In fact, if I said to you it was a religious institution or it started that way, you might be surprised. But they did a study on peace of mind. And really, when you're talking about loneliness, you're talking about peace of mind. Here's what they came out with. They did a study on peace of mind. And they found factors that contributed greatly to emotional and mental stability are. Listen to this list. Because it's the outline of this series on loneliness. One, the absence of suspicion and resentment. Nursing a grudge was a major factor in unhappiness. And I submit to you, nursing a grudge is one of the greatest factors in you feeling lonely. Number two, not living in the past. An unwholesome preoccupation with old mistakes and failures leads to depression. You start looking in the rearview mirror, you're going to be one very lonely person. Number three, not wasting time and energy fighting conditions you cannot change. There. Now remember, this is all from a secular perspective. God's not in this picture. Their counsel is cooperate with life instead of trying to run away from it. Number four, force yourself to stay involved with the living world. Resist the temptation to withdraw and become reclusive during periods of emotional stress. Number five, refuse to indulge in self-pity when life hands you a raw deal. Notice the terminology. Life has handed me a raw deal. Isn't that like Fortuna? You know, oh, God is Fortuna. Happenstance, you know. I've been dealt a bad deal. Isn't that sad? To think that, to live your life either believing there is no God, the good, gracious, loving, omnipotent, sovereign God doesn't exist. It's all happenstance. Or if that God does exist, he's not involved in our lives. What a sad thing. And then finally, they said, find something bigger than yourself to believe in. Self-centered, egotistical people score lowest in any test for measuring happiness. Isn't that interesting? But, you know, like so many things in America, we have removed God, and now we just believe in a higher power. And I'm telling you, if you do not identify that higher power as the true higher power, if you do not identify him and understand that that higher power doesn't only exist, but he specifically identified himself and he's communicated himself to us. If you don't believe that, you're clueless. So, we are looking at really calamity. Misfortune is defined as calamity, trouble. Of course, their interpretation is it's happenstance. There's no random reason for it. But how we spin, how we see calamity and trouble in our life is what can either lead us closer to the God that wants an intimate relationship with each one of us or totally feeling isolated and left alone. Three things. We looked last week at Jeremiah 5 and verse 19. We won't look at that today, but that is basically calamity and trouble come when we stop seeking God. Tonight we're going to look at the next two, which is calamity and trouble comes when we stop seeing God. Just like the 10 spies, you know, they went through and saw. It's like, I always marvel at that, because they went to look at the promised land. By definition, that speaks of hope, does it not? And yet those 10 men saw the exact same thing that Joshua and Caleb saw, and they had such a cynical, sour spin on the whole thing that they poisoned the multitude and every one of them, because of the unbelief of listening to the wrong people, ended up wasting 40 years of their lives while the previous generation died off. And they withheld the blessing of God. They kept the windows of heaven closed because of their unbelief. And then thirdly, calamity and trouble comes not just when we stop seeing God in life, but when he stops sustaining us. And when you and I fail the grace of God, it's all about God's grace. I'd like you to turn to Psalm 78 now. If you're not there, you might be there. Psalm 78. There is a key term, a key aspect, a key provision from God that we need to become so experienced at it, so knowledgeable of it, so aware of it, so thinking of it, that it will affect every aspect of our life. And I'm talking about the grace of God. In fact, you know that the word grateful is a Latin term brought over into the English. It comes from the word gratis, which goes back to the word grace. And that's what grateful is. What is grateful? To be grateful is to have a due sense of benefits. Again, it goes back to your spin on life. If you're grateful, if you're a grateful person, you have this sense that you have been a benefactor of good. That to me describes Joshua and Caleb, right? They went into that land, and what did they see? They saw the grapes. They saw the pomegranates. They saw a land flowing with milk and honey. They saw a whole, almost a paradise that could sustain them. Even on this side of Eden, the curse, they saw the grace of God. The other 10 who went through the same exact place, they didn't see any of that. They saw the giants. They saw the walls. They saw all the obstacles. So to be grateful is having a due sense of benefits. And secondly, to be kindly disposed of the one for whom the favor has received. When you're grateful, when you express gratitude, you're saying thank you to something or someone, because you have given me something good. I have benefited from you. I have received good, and I'm expressing that to you. People that are not grateful are people that are unfortunate because they've removed God from the picture. So, let's look at this aspect. Calamity and troubles comes when we stop seeing God. And we go to Israel in Psalm 78 as a perfect description. And by the way, this is quite a long psalm rehearsing the highs and the lows of Israel. How faithful God was and how unbelieving they were. And yet, in this cycle of failing God and complaining and not walking by faith and then being chastened and repenting and turning to God. And as it says in verse 35, and they remembered that God was their rock. Oh yeah, I forgot. Oh yeah, God, you're my rock. You know that God is, He is the rock. On Christ the solid rock I stand, all other ground is sinking sand. That's true, He is always the rock. But they forgot that He is the rock and the high God, their Redeemer. And this was a cycle that would go on and on again. And it describes, and it can describe, any Christian's life. When we stop seeing God, when we stop thinking and experiencing and meditating on the abundant grace that has been given to us. So look at Psalm 78, verse 25. Man did eat angels' food. That's manna. Do you know what manna literally means? What is it? Sounds tempting, doesn't it? Come and get your fresh hot. What is it? Manna, the provision of God. Perfect balance of essential vitamins and nutrients, perfect amount of carbohydrates and calories and saturated fats. It was the perfect meal that God gave. These guys ate it for 40 years. Wouldn't you just like to have maybe a meal or two? Wouldn't you like to try it? I sure would. And apparently there were various ways to prepare it. Just one day, maybe a week. The menu is manna. They ate angels' food. He sent them meat to the full. And you know what that is? That's the goodness and the grace of God, is it not? There he goes again, meeting their needs. And by the way, in another place, it tells us, it was so much more than just feeding their stomachs. You know, that he sustained them so that the sandals that they wore never, their footwear never wore out. I mean, that's Nike. Let's see you do that, Nike. You know, God did that. Verse 29. So they did eat and were well filled, for he gave them their own desire. How good God is. Now verse 32. For all this, they rejoiced in the goodness of God. No, it doesn't say that. For all this, they sinned still and believed not for his wondrous works. Do you know that exact same thing could be said about the 10 spies? In all this, they sinned still and believed not for his wondrous works. Do you know that could be said about any one of us when we take our eyes off of all the good things that God has provided for us? Verse 33, therefore, remember what we learned in Sunday school, not just today, but many, many times. When you see the word therefore, it's there for a reason. Therefore, and it goes back to what's before. Therefore, their days did he consume in vanity and their years in trouble. Unfortunate circumstances. Because they forgot Almighty God. Take your Bibles, please. Turn to Matthew chapter 18. I want to bring to your attention something that if you are born again, you've already been through this experience. You've already tasted and seen that the Lord is good. If you're not born again, maybe you've just heard about it. But I believe most of us, if not all of us here tonight, are born again. So look at Matthew chapter 18. Peter is talking about forgiveness. And he says, how many times should I forgive someone? And Jesus answers it with an unusual story that really reflects the Christian life. He tells Peter in verse 22, you forgive 70 times 7. And then in verse 23 says, therefore, is the kingdom of heaven likened unto a certain king, which would take account of his servants. And when he had begun to reckon, one was brought unto him which owed him 10,000 talents. Now, 10,000 talents is a humongous amount. Most of us would not make that in our entire life. And verse 25, but for as much as he had not to pay, his Lord commanded him to be sold, and his wife and children and all that he had, and payment to be made. The servant therefore fell down and worshipped him, saying, Lord, have patience with me, and I will pay thee all. We're going to find out in a minute. This is a little story, an illustration, an analogy. You see, this king really represents God. And the debt, the humongous debt that this man owed is really the debt of sin that every one of us owes. Far more than we could ever pay. I love that saying, Jesus paid a debt he didn't know because we owed a debt that we couldn't pay. So what can we do? Well, some people, very arrogantly, are trying to earn righteousness, obviously not realizing the incredible debt they owe. Folks, you could be perfect. You could heap up all kinds of righteousnesses and still fall short of the glory of God. Your debt, my debt, is overwhelming. We have sinned against a holy God. And the only thing we must do is cry out to God for mercy. Verse 27, then the Lord of that servant was moved with compassion and loosed him and forgave him the debt. Just like that. Whoa. Just like that? You mean all he did was cry out for mercy? And just like that, his debt is forgiven. Just like that for you and I. Now, right there, folks, there is no better understanding of the grace of God than right there. Grace is unmerited favor. You've heard of the acrostic, God's riches at Christ's expense, grace. Grace is God giving us something good that we don't deserve. And I'm telling you, this story is all about Calvary, is it not? And with compassion, he loosed him and he forgave him the debt. Folks, that's you and I if you're born again. And right there is where you and I need to park. Because if God did not do anything ever again good for us, the fact that he saved us and washed our sin as white as snow and guaranteed us a place in heaven is more than we will ever deserve. But he that offered up his own son gave him freely. Shall he not also freely give us all things? That's the kind of God we serve. Now, if you've never just parked there and meditated on that and let it sink in and really had a moment of awe at just how good God has been to you, then you're going to move into this next thing like grease lightning, and you're going to interpret life just like those 10 spies did. Look at verse 28. But the same servant went out, found one of his fellow servants, which owed him 100 pence, and he laid hands on him, and he took him by the throat, saying, pay me that thou owest. And his fellow servant fell down at his feet and besought him, saying, have patience with me, and I will pay thee all. And he would not. Now, you and I read this just like the people that heard it. And we are outraged by the injustice. How dare you, who owed 10,000 talents could turn around and someone owed you 100 pence, which is minutia compared to the debt you owed. And you would not forgive that person? How can you forget? Obviously, this person forgot the forgiveness that he received, the grace that he received. For him to then turn around and in a picayune way demand that someone else's minor little inconvenience to himself would be meted out. That's what we do when we forget the grace of God and begin to magnify all the things that aren't right in our life. You see, we are either grateful or ungrateful. We are either people that have a due sense of benefit. I mean, we believe, you know, I've received good. I am a benefactor. God has been good to me. And therefore, I'm grateful, and grateful is then not just having a due sense of benefit, but it is also having warm feelings towards the person that has blessed you, and that's God. Or you and I are just the opposite. We are those that have a sense of benefits due. Like, you know what? I haven't had the good that I deserve. And I have a sense of entitlement. I deserve far more than I've already received. And so I'm gonna just demand that I get my fair share and that more good things happen to me. Oh, how ungrateful. You are either appreciative or you are demanding and ungrateful. And I submit to you that if you are someone that has forgotten the grace of God and you don't see the goodness of God in so many aspects of your life, you're going to be one of the most loneliest people on the face of the earth. Psalm 68:19, the psalmist said, "Blessed be the Lord who daily loadeth us with overwhelming problems." Wait a minute, I think I misread that. Oh, I misread it. "Blessed be the Lord who daily loadeth us with benefits." Psalm 103 and verse 2. "Bless the Lord, O my soul, and forget not all his benefits." Psalm 116 and verse 12. "What shall I render unto the Lord for all his benefits towards me?" That's an attitude, folks. That's a spin on life. That's a Joshua and Caleb saying, "Look at this. They're saying, look at those grapes. Oh, the grapes." By the way, have you ever had BJ's grapes? I mean, they're like plums. This is not meant to be a promotion, but I guess it is. But, oh, I love those big, juicy grapes that look like plums that just explode. Oh, they're so good. That's what Joshua and Caleb saw. And they were probably 20 times better. The grapes, the pomegranates. Oh, they're looking at the same land, and they're like, look at all this good stuff. But then the other 10 are looking at the exact same thing and saying, oh my, look at the giants. Look at the walls, we're doomed. Isn't that the same thing that God's people, they're either one or the other, right? We either know Joshua and Caleb's, and they're usually the fewer, or we know the 10. They're going through the same life, but they have a totally different spin. What is your attitude? See, it's so easy to become like most of the 10 lepers that Jesus healed. Remember the 10 lepers that Jesus healed? Do you think they weren't grateful initially, or do you think they were really upset that they were healed? No. But you know what? Only one of them turned back to thank the Lord. The other of them, they're probably like, oh good, now I can get on with my life. But they didn't even think enough to go back and express gratitude to the one that healed them. Don't be like the 9 that didn't go back. Dr. Harry Ironside said, "We would worry less if we praised more. Thanksgiving is the enemy of discontent and dissatisfaction. You and I become lonely when we fail to see the goodness of God in our lives. Ian McLaren made this statement about worry. And you know what worry is? Someone, I forget who said it, they said, worry is practical atheism. I think my father-in-law gave me that quote. Worry is practical atheism. And Ian McLaren said this, what does your anxiety do? It does not empty tomorrow of its sorrow, but it does empty today of its strength. It does not make you escape the evil. It makes you unfit to cope with it when it comes. God gives us the power to bear all the sorrow of His making, but He does not guarantee to give us the strength to bear the burdens of our own making, such as worry induces. Wow. You see, it's perspective. You and I can be our own worst enemies if we fail to see, acknowledge, and magnify the grace of God in our lives. I want to give you an example. You remember the story of missionary Dr. William Leslie. Let me remind you what happened. Dr. Leslie, we're talking back in the early 1900s. He was a dentist, got called on the mission field later in life, wanted to become a medical missionary. So he and his wife left their practice and in 1912 went to a remote village in the Democratic Republic of the Congo. And they served the Lord for 17 years. And during those years, they served in a place called Vanga. And the very ministry ended on a very sour note. They had a falling out with some of the tribal elders, were asked to leave. And they left. Dr. Leslie left feeling like, you know, he went to reach those people for Christ, and he felt like he was a total failure. 17 years faithfully serving in Christ, and he saw minimal results. He left, went back home, and died 9 years later, thinking he died a loser. Then, 84 years later, some missionaries and believers happened to travel into those remote areas. They had studied the area of the Congo, and they presumed that there would be no Christian influence there. After all, the records of Dr. Leslie, you know, he left a failure, and he didn't think he made a mark, and because of that, not anybody else thought it, so they thought, you know, there's really no gospel witness there. And they went into these remote village after village after village, and there was churches, testimonies, the gospel, all over the place. Surprised these men. So they began to inquire. They began to, okay, you know, look at this huge, massive stone church. Where did this come from? So they began to inquire, and they found out many years ago about this missionary named Dr. William Leslie. That, in fact, they didn't even know his full name. They had to do some research to find out. And it ends up that village after village after village, soul after soul after soul, was impacted by the gospel because of the years that that man faithfully served. He left and died thinking he was a failure. Ends up, not so much. That's why God says, judge nothing before the time until the Lord come, who will both bring to light the hidden things of darkness. God's going to bring it all out. Then we're going to have our praise of God. Don't you dare think that you're a failure if you're serving Jesus Christ. Don't compare yourself with someone else, or you don't see fruit. Maybe someone else, all these people are getting saved. Not many people are getting saved or lasting. It's so easy to spin your labor in a non-Caleb and Joshua way and say, oh man, I'm a loser. You know, like Dr. William Leslie, you think you're going around with a big L on your forehead. And God says, oh, you have no idea what you've done. I'm heartbroken for Dr. Leslie. You know, here's this man, I mean, who performed his funeral? And what did he say? Well, there's old Willie, old Bill, you know, William Leslie. Oh, yeah, that's right. I forgot he went to the Congo for 17 years. But you know what? He helped a lot of people with their teeth. Helped a lot of people, man. He made a lot of people feel good with their teeth. And, you know, his whole life, this man has no idea. I can't wait. I hope, you know, we're there on Judgment Day or when the rewards are handed out, like Charlie was talking about this morning. You know, you can almost imagine. Now I'm only being hypothetical here, but here's the line. And here's Dr. William Leslie standing in line. I got nothing. The names are going through. Dr. William Leslie. All right, here I am. Failure, loser, 17 years in the Congo, nothing to show for it. Dr. William Leslie, look at all your crowns. Look at all you did. What? Imagine that, you know? Because God used him. But he didn't see it. And he didn't see the immediate results. And you and I have to be very mindful that, you know what? Like John Quincy Adams, I'll never forget, I love this story. John Quincy Adams served, he's the only person in America to serve as a president of the United States, and after he retired, to then go into Congress. And he fought hard against slavery. And it seemed like so many of his efforts were opposed, this side, that side, this way and that way. Somebody asked him, you know, aren't you discouraged because all this work you put in to try to go against slavery and end slavery? And that's when he made the very wise statement. He said, duty is ours, results are God's. We need to remember the same thing. Duty is ours and leave the results to God. But we don't do that. Go to Hebrews chapter 12, please. Hebrews chapter 12. Calamity and trouble comes when we stop seeking God. We looked at that last week. Calamity and trouble comes when we stop seeing God. We don't think about the grace of God. We forget about all the good things that we have received by the grace of God. And then finally, calamity and trouble comes when we stop being sustained by God. Look at Hebrews chapter 12. And I really wish that there was more to this passage, and I wish that there were clearly other parallel passages that fed off of this that gave us more information. We do know a lot about the grace of God. We do know a lot about bitterness, but I always marvel at this text. Look at Hebrews chapter 12 and verse 15. Looking diligently, lest any man fail of the grace of God, lest any root of bitterness spring up and trouble you, and thereby many be defiled. I think that there is so much to this. This is one of those verses I think you could meditate on indefinitely and just keep growing in the Lord. You can fail the grace of God. That's evidence. So God doesn't fail you, but we can fail His grace. That is His provision, His supply. I see that happening when people get hurt and they don't forgive. I see that happening when people look at a situation and get sour towards it. In fact, this whole thing of being cynical. Remember that? I love the idea. I don't love the idea. I hate being cynical. I hate cynicism. But I love identifying it. Remember what cynicism is? It comes from the same root word as the word canine, dogs. Listen to the definition of cynical. And again, it goes from the Greek, the same Greek word for canine or a dog. Having the qualities of a surly dog. You ever met someone like that? Not Joshua and Caleb. But there's a lot of people that are they have just soured. They're surly dogs. Everything about life is just, they're ready to snap your head off. Listen to some of these adjectives. Snarling. Rah! I've met people. Rah! Excuse me. Captious. Can you believe that? I had no idea what captious was. I had to look up captious. And it literally means disposed to find fault. Wow. Because what Charlie was talking about this morning, those people that are just, they'll find fault at everything. Kurish. Can you believe that? There's another word. I'm like, what? Kurish. Kurish means brutal or malignant. It means you're, a word I think of is toxic. There's people, you know, your attitude, our attitude can be toxic. You know that? You ever been around someone that's a snarling dog, that's cynical? Now, Archie Bunker was just a character, you know, but that guy was a snarling dog, wasn't he? He really was, but there's people like him. Some of you are like, who's Archie Bunker? Don't worry about it. And then austere. That means severe, harsh, or stern. You know what? People that are cynical have just soured to life. They've forgotten the grace of God. They have failed the grace of God. And I submit to you, you take any scenario across the face of the globe, you can go to the most horrible, black, bleakest time of history, and you can find sweet experiences, and you can find sour experiences. You say, oh yeah, what about Nazi Germany? Remember what we just read from Corey Ten Boom and Betsy Ten Boom? How about this one? Joseph. Remember Joseph? Remember all the things that happened to Joseph? I mean, he's hated, despised by his brothers, sold into slavery, one thing after the other just kept going wrong in Joseph's life. Boy, if anything, we could call Joseph's life a series of unfortunate events. He could have been one of the most bitter, sour people we knew. Yeah, Joseph, he used to be a good kid. He's a daydreamer, but man, when his brothers sold him into slavery, he just really soured. I mean, he spent his whole life just thinking about getting revenge. You know, I've met people that have confessed to me that they've just spent their life thinking about getting revenge. What a place to be. Joseph could have been one of the sourest, most cynical people. Thankfully, he wasn't. Thankfully for his brothers. Or they would have been in big trouble, wouldn't they? But do you remember what Joseph's attitude was? You meant it for evil. You meant it for evil. Can you imagine him really running with that? I said, you meant it for evil. I mean, you can really go with that, but he didn't say that. He said, you meant it for evil. But God meant it for good. It's kind of like that verse in Colossians. I think it's Colossians 4:6. I might be wrong. But it says, let your speech be always with grace, seasoned with salt, that you may know how you ought to answer every man. I love that verse. It's like whatever comes out of your mouth. Okay, put a little salt on it, you know. Let your speech be always with grace. It's like, okay, when something comes out, we've got it. It's not good just to let it go out in the raw. We have to let it be seasoned with salt. Let it always with grace. And that's true about our spin on life. We see the same things that the 12 spies saw. We see the good, the bad, and the ugly. But how are we going to spin it? What's going to be our attitude? What's going to come out of our mouth? Out of the abundance of the heart, the mouth speaketh. Are we going to be sour towards everything like Joseph could have been? You meant it for evil, but you know what? Hey, we have a good God. God meant it for good. That's where we need to park. David Brainerd is another one. Two quick examples before we close here. David Brainerd is another William Leslie story in my mind. Now, David Brainerd was a missionary to the Pennsylvania and New Jersey Indians in the 1700s. And here, in fact, he only had a 3-year ministry because he had all kinds of physical problems. Ended up dying very young, only being on the mission field for, I think, 3 years. And those 3 years were marked by this kind of day. Listen to one of the entries in his journal. May 18th, 1743. My labor is hard and extremely difficult, and I have little appearance of success to comfort me. Wow, that sounds like William Leslie, doesn't it? Wow, that sounds like some of us sometimes, doesn't it? He died. It continued like that for 2 years. The third year, he died, 1747, of tuberculosis. He had only made a handful of converts. David Brainerd, loser, right? I mean, you could see how some people would say that. But you see, his good friend was Jonathan Edwards, the famous evangelist. In fact, he did David Brainerd's funeral. He came across David Brainerd's journal and read it entry after entry and was moved by the deep spiritual relationship that David Brainerd had with his God. And so Jonathan Edwards published David Brainerd's journal after his death, and David Brainerd became a legend. His journal inspired missionaries like William Carey, Jim Elliot, Brainerd's cousin, the second great awakening evangelist, James Brainerd Taylor. Christian after Christian have been encouraged and found deep help and hope by reading David Brainerd today. He's one of the greats. But I remind you that when he died, he was obscure. He didn't see much in his life that would have been noteworthy. I close with this. I've been very moved recently by some tragic news to me of Ron Hamilton. Ron Hamilton and I know some people really get upset. They don't like Ron Hamilton. Ron Hamilton, in my mind, he is an incredibly gifted musician that has written at least 900 hymns and songs that have just blessed the Church of Jesus Christ today. It's been my privilege to meet him at several Majesty Music Colleges, and he is just a gracious, humble, precious brother in the Lord who lost his eye to cancer 40 years ago and could have been very sour about that. And I want to read to you again this letter that came from Shelley because of a recent diagnosis that Ron had. Said, "Dear friends, for these past 40 years, God has given Ron the gift of music and language. During his lifetime, he has composed over 900 songs and written over 60 stories. Ron has been diagnosed with early onset dementia." How unfortunate. Is that how he takes it? Ron's specific type of dementia is called frontotemporal dementia, which affects not only his memory, but his behavior and language. As the disease is progressing, although music has not left him, his language skills are gradually fading, and we are told that he will eventually be unable to communicate verbally. How unfortunate. Well, if you don't have a God in heaven that's good, how else can you spin it? Shelley says, "It is interesting to me that the very gift of language that God gave Ron during a 40-year window of time is the gift that is being taken away from him by his illness." How unfortunate. No, that's not Shelley's spin. She quotes one of Ron's songs. "He knoweth the end of each path that I take." Ron is at peace, trusting explicitly in his God. He has accepted this new challenge in life with grace, just as he did losing his left eye to cancer 40 years ago. And then she goes on, "Ron and I are enjoying our time together, as Ron's particular type of dementia tends to progress rapidly. Although his disease is challenging for me as his primary caregiver, I'm grateful that Ron is sweet and calm. As most dementia patients become agitated and irritable, he falls asleep many nights on his knees by our bedside. He is my spiritual hero." And then she goes on and talks about the blessing of all the family that is there, and even her son who is waiting in heaven for them. Here's a lady, here's a couple that has put a spin on life because they serve a good God who is sovereign and who is working all things together for good. Folks, you and I need to be like Ron and Shelley Hamilton. You and I need to be like Joshua and Caleb. You and I need to be like Joseph. We need to see everything through the spectrum of God's grace, because we are benefactors of good. Let's pray.